Good afternoon. Welcome back to Midday on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Gary Eichten. Glad you could join us. Well, as you heard on the news, Republican State Representative Jim Rossberg is back at work at the state capitol today after being arrested last week on three counts of felony criminal sexual conduct. Rossberg from Isanti has pleaded not guilty to the charges. He's free on $25,000 bail. House Ethics Committee is expected to conduct an ethics investigation into the charges. The committee could recommend a range of actions against Rossberg, all the way from doing nothing to expelling him. But in the meanwhile, House Speaker Steve Swigum says that Rossberg has, quote, a right, a duty to represent his constituents. The Rossberg case has at least temporarily overshadowed the major business facing legislators this spring, namely what to do with the $1.8 billion surplus, what taxes, if any, should be cut, what projects should be included in the state bonding bill, what should be done about the profile of learning, and the unicameral proposal. For that matter, how much more, if any more, should the state spend on transportation and housing? There are several major issues that the legislature will have to resolve in the next 6 weeks or so, and joining us today from the Capitol to bring us up to date and to take your questions are legislative leaders Roger Moe, DFL Senate Majority Leader, and Republican House Speaker Steve Swigum. If you have a question for Senator Moe or Representative Swigum, give us a call here, 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. If you're calling from outside the Twin Cities, you can reach us toll-free, and that number is 1-800-242-2828. 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Senator Moe, Speaker Swigum, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you, Gary. It's nice to be with you again.
You with us, Speaker Swigum? Well, temporarily, I guess he's not there. But hopefully we'll be able to get that squared away. Senator Moe, when last we talked, it seemed like a tax rebate of some substantial amount, $400, $500 million, was a virtual certainty to pass the legislature. Is that still the case, or are legislators having some second thoughts?
Well, the Senate has passed the rebate coupled with some additional agricultural aid. That passed a few weeks ago, so the Senate has already taken a position on a rebate. I think it's in the area of about $470 million.
And do you expect that there's going to be any backtracking at all in the House or from the governor, for that matter, or can we pretty much count on that money arriving this summer?
I don't believe the governor has indicated any backing off of that. I know the speaker has on occasion, when he talks about taxes, indicates that that's not as high a priority as a permanent tax cut. But I don't, at this stage of the game, I don't see any backing off of it, no.
Mm-hmm. Governor Ventura has said that he would really like to see the legislature keep things pretty simple this session. Pass a bonding bill of some sort, cut license fees for motor vehicles, and then send the rebate check back. Is that realistic, or do you hope to accomplish a little more during this session?
Well, I think we're going to accomplish more than that. Obviously, I can appreciate the governor, you know, basically wanting his agenda, but his agenda is just one of many that are in the process of being looked at. So, and I would add that the revenue forecasts, of course, complicate this somewhat. And so we are looking at certainly the rebate. We're looking at permanent tax cuts. We're looking at some strategic investments and hopefully a balanced transportation package along with a balanced bonding bill. All of those are issues that will be before us, but certainly there's others. You mentioned in the news account the safe harbor bill for the newborn babies. There's issues dealing with stiffening DWI penalties. There's the statewide integrated information systems that grew out of the Katie Poyer tragedy. There's feedlot amendments, so there's certainly a lot of things in play. I tend to think what happens generally is a short session. We come in here with the best of intentions to keep the agenda focused, but it has a tendency to get away from us a little bit.
There was a fairly nasty fight over Commissioner Steve Minn's appointment, and ultimately the Senate rejected his appointment as Commerce Commissioner, Public Service Commissioner. Is that likely to going to carry over, or are the wounds already starting to heal over there?
Well, it's beyond us. I mean, we made the decision, and I think the Senate has moved on. I don't, as far as I'm concerned, it's an issue that was brought up and dealt with, and now we move on to everything else. So it's not certainly something that's going to have any carryover or lasting effect in the Senate. I know that. We have other issues that are very important to deal with, and as I indicated, many of those are budget-related.
Mm-hmm. Senate Majority Leader Roger Moe is our guest this hour. House Speaker Steve Swigum will be joining us in a few minutes. He has been delayed with House business, but meanwhile, Senator Moe is with us here for a bit, so if you'd like to call in with a question for Senator Moe, give us a call, 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. Outside the Twin Cities, you can reach us toll-free at 1-800-242-2828, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. As we take a look at some of the big issues facing Minnesota legislators, they're getting to the point now of, about 6 weeks to go, you think, Senator, before adjournment?
Well, I'm a little hesitant to make a guess, you know, because if I guess a date, then you hold me to it.
No.
Obviously, we certainly do want to be, we want to have everything done before the Passover, Easter weekend there. And so, you know, I think you're right to say we're about halfway through all of this.
Mm-hmm. Al, your question for Senator Moe?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Quick one. Senator Moe, could you bring me up to speed a little bit? From your understanding of the rebate, it's going to be, quote-unquote, pretty insignificant compared to, you know, what we expected in the past. And if it's, you know, the few hundred dollars that it sounds like it's going to be, I guess I'm kind of the greater good theory. Why don't we take it and put it into something that's been neglected for the last, 20, 25 years, like a road system? Correct me if I'm wrong, but I've heard a lot of blamed in the last 15, 20 years of legislature basically ignoring our, you know, current highway system, and we're in the situation we're in now because of that, and now we're hearing transportation commissioners say, well, to fix it right, it would take $10 billion, and we can't do that. Well, it's kind of a collective thing that's been going on for 20 years, so maybe we need to do something and actually improve it, because a lot of us are really tired of waiting on the ramps and on the freeways. Waste of productivity.
Well, Al raises a good point. First of all, as it relates to the rebate itself in terms of the amount, you can put, you can do your own math. This particular one that the Senate passed at about $470 million, that compares to last year of $1.3 billion. So you can figure out kind of proportionally what that might mean for you as an individual. And then, of course, the other argument that he was making was, since it's probably not going to be significant to him and maybe to many other people, why don't we invest these resources on one-time projects? And roads and bridges are certainly a one-time investment. It's tough to argue with Al about that, and all I can say is that we will be passing, in addition to the rebate, we will be passing a very significant transportation funding package that recognizes both the transit needs, road and bridge needs, some of the bottleneck problems we have in certain areas of the state. And at the same time, I think we can do that and have a rebate. I think the rebate issue probably was decided on election eve of 98 when voters decided they would go with the one who said that all the money should go back.
Senator Carol Flynn has come up with a proposed constitutional amendment, which, as I understand it, would devote all of the current excise tax or sales tax that's collected on motor vehicle sales for transportation projects over and above what the current highway tax fund. Would you support something like that, Senator?
No, I don't believe so. The problem, again, with the proposal, and I don't in any way take away from Senator Flynn's efforts on transportation. She has been a stalwart in that regard. The problem, if you constitutionally dedicate all of the motor vehicle excise tax, you basically are taking $450 to $500 million a year and taking that away from the general fund and focusing it just on transportation. I believe that means then if we did that this session, we basically then would have no tax reduction, permanent tax reduction, nor would there be investments in other areas like education or environment. So I can understand the need for a comprehensive transportation package, but I would be reluctant to lock it into the Constitution that way.
Mm-hmm. Stephen, your question, please.
Yes, I guess we've been running surpluses now for, I guess, quite a few bienniums or years, or however you want to look at it. And when will, I guess I want my money back. And I guess we look at it as, why do you know how to spend my money better than I do? I'm a working family. If I had all my money back, I could fix my house. I could lower my bills. I could buy a computer for my child. When do we get our money back and just plain just say, hey, we overtaxed you. Here's your money back. Every year, we seem to find more and more things to spend on. If we keep spending money and starting new programs, we're just saddling our future children with all this extra government spending that they'll have to pay for.
Senator?
Well, I suspect you can have one of two options. You can either have the budget, the revenue forecasts come in on the positive side, like they have been lately, or they can come in on the negative side. And I guess if you're in a position where you would want to pick one of the two, it seems to me you'd want to pick on the positive side. As you know, we make these decisions based upon the best forecasts that we have at the time. And the legislature does not do the forecasts. We get those forecasts from the Department of Revenue, and they contract with a national economic forecasting outfit. And the bottom line is that the economy has been outperforming what the economic forecasts predicted. So when you guess 2 to 2.5 years in advance, you sometimes miss the mark, and we've been missing the mark on the low side. I've been here when it's gone the other way, and I can assure you it's a lot more fun dealing with reducing taxes than it is raising taxes. So again, we should do, you're right, we should always try to fine-tune the economic forecast, try to do a better job, and I would think that in the future that will be the case. As you know, we permanently cut the income taxes last year to the tune of $1.6 billion, and I would think that that's going to start to show up before too long in terms of these revenue forecasts.
Senator Roger Moe, Senate Majority Leader, is with us, and House Speaker Steve Swigum has now joined us from our Capitol Bureau. Good afternoon, Mr. Speaker.
Hi, Gary. Hi, Senator.
Thanks for joining us here.
Yeah, sorry for being a little bit late, Gary.
No, that's all right. Let me ask you before we get back to our callers here, what's the latest now on the Rosberg matter? He's at the Capitol working as a legislator, right?
Yes, Representative Rosberg is here, and certainly he has the right to do that. In fact, he has the duty to do that for his citizens of his district. Right now, as we are speaking, though, Gary, the ethics complaint charge will be being filed by our Majority Leader, Tim Pawlenty. In fact, he's probably even signing it right now. And that the ethics complaint charge basically doesn't say that there is guilt. It doesn't try to prejudge guilt or innocence, but it certainly says that the criminal complaint is serious enough and very serious that we should at least initiate the ethics complaint process.
Is there any way that you can actually have a fair process, though, given the fact that apparently, well, Mr. Rosberg has been advised not to say anything about this while the criminal proceedings are going ahead, and presumably it would be difficult to get some of the witnesses to comment too.
And that certainly is going to be the question, Gary, as to whether we're going to be able to get witnesses to come before the ethics committee or not, or whether the criminal process, the courts will just say, let the courts, the professionals handle it, and they'll see the ethics complaint process in the House as being somewhat of an amateur basis. I guess that might be some of the problem, but we plan to proceed. The ethics complaint will be filed. We plan to have hearings, open hearings, as soon as possible. And, the rule also says, Gary, that before signee die, which I guess would probably be someplace in the next month to 5 weeks, before signee die, the ethics committee does have to make a recommendation back to the legislature, mm-hmm. back to the House.
Do you think that Representative Rosberg should resign, even if he says he's not guilty, but just mm-hmm. to remove this the cloud of suspicion, if you will?
Last Friday, Gary, I would have said that. Assuming what was going to be in the criminal complaint, assuming the seriousness of the probable cause to come to the House floor, I would have said that. In fact, I think preliminarily I did say that. Now, having seen the criminal complaint, the nature of the evidence that is there, I think that we certainly have to tone back just a little bit and assume that there is innocence before proven guilty.
Okay.
In other words, the criminal complaint doesn't quite have the nature of evidence as we were expecting to be there.
Okay. Let's get back to some callers with questions for House Speaker Steve Swigum and Senate Majority Leader Roger Moore. Patrick, go ahead, please.
Hello, legislators. I'd like to make a point before I get into my question.
Just a short one.
Okay, Ventura got 30%, little over 30% of the vote. I don't think that was a complete referendum on his policies. There's another 60% that voted the other way. Okay, you guys, a request was made to you folks for emergency services for the homeless. There's like $3 million per biennium or for the biennium. And you guys gave them $750,000. And I'm just curious why, when we had $1.6 billion surplus, you only gave them that amount of money to help the most vulnerable people in our society.
Okay, Senator Moore, you want to take that one? I know you don't have a lot of time here, and I'd like to...
I'm sorry, I can't go into... I can't give the specifics of that. All I can do is say that I was very proud of the fact that the legislature passed a record amount in terms of housing last session, $120 million to put into housing. And that was the highest amount that we've ever appropriated for housing in this state. And so I would hope that some of it got targeted towards the issues that the caller mentioned. I would also add that Governor Ventura has recommended a number of different housing initiatives this session as well. And I believe they total about... I think it's about $80 million. Don't hold me to those figures. I don't have my notes in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Senate finds those recommendations to be positive, and my guess is that we're going to pass additional housing initiatives this session.
Speaker Swigum, the House likely to go along with an additional $83 million for housing?
More likely to go along with some additional spending for housing, and let me certainly give due credit to Senator Moe and to the Senate for their proposal, their substantive proposal on the housing last year, which basically the House then accepted. But I will give Senator Moe due credit for it being the Senate's proposal. I do believe that $88 million is very, very substantial, and we will be looking at it in realm of the other needs that exist, whether they be crime needs, Katie's Law, whether they be needs for transportation, they need needs for taxpayers and tax reductions for working families, for moms and dads too. It'll all come together. I would like to hesitate from saying $88 million.
Okay, Robert, your question, please.
I would like to know why Senator Moe doesn't want to give the citizens of the state the opportunity to vote for the unicameral legislature.
Senator.
Well, I disagree with it, and the notion that just because it's a constitutional amendment that it should automatically go on the ballot is a very dangerous precedent to set. Just for the caller's benefit, we've had 314 constitutional amendments introduced the last 8 years, and if the notion is that simply because it's a constitutional amendment it should be voted on, it should be put on the ballot, I think you're going to have a horrendous ballot, number one. I think you're going to have politics played with constitutional amendments far beyond what you ever would have expected. And I think you'd end up with full-blown campaigns and I think basically selling the Constitution. So I disagree with it. I think a constitutional amendment is like a bill. If you agree with it, then you should vote for it. If you disagree with it, you should vote against it. I would point out that... at least in the Senate, in terms of the process so far, that proposal has been voted down twice in two different committees. but we have kept it alive, again, so that the proponents can try to make their case. And I think that's the test we have to meet. We have to make sure that the proponents get an opportunity to make their case. But all I can say is so far before two different committees, it's been voted down.
Senator Moe, doesn't this one fall into a little different category, though, than all the other constitutional amendments in that it directly affects the structure of the legislature as opposed to various laws in other areas, and so that this whole argument about, well, really you folks shouldn't decide this because it amounts to a conflict of interest.
Oh, no, that's certainly a convenient argument for maybe the proponents, but the bottom line is that we've been elected to make judgments, to perform a responsibility, and it ought to be treated like any other proposal that comes before the legislature. If you agree with it, support it. If you disagree with it, vote against it. Matter of fact, I would point out that the two co-sponsors or the two co-chairs of the effort to have a constitutional amendment for a one-house legislature, when they were in the legislature, Senator Pillsbury and Senator Merriam, they voted against a number of constitutional amendments. So I can see where, that's a convenient argument, but it doesn't really hold up.
Speaker Swigum, is the unicameral proposal likely to pass the House?
It's likely to pass the House, Gary. I happen to be a very strong proponent of the policy of the unicameral. I do believe it would add to the openness, certainly add to the accountability of the process. But having said that, and even disagreeing as to the policy or the consequences of the unicameral, because it is such a marquee issue, Governor Ventura has made it his marquee issue of the legislative session, I believe it's very appropriate that we move it through the process and at the very minimum expect votes on the House and Senate floors on the issue. We are certainly going to try to do that from the House side, and I think that it's, could even be argued that at the very minimum it should be sent before the voters of the state, in regards to this constitutional amendment.
Is there any chance that it will end up in a conference committee? Which, of course,
if it ends up in conference committee and gets killed in a conference committee, I think the opponents would only be making the case for the governor that we have to change the process and get rid of conference committees.
Senator Moe, I know you have to run, but I before you go, everybody wants their own radio show now. Are you going to have your own?
Well, I tell you, I'm not entertaining enough to have my own radio program, but I think that that was a legitimate request made by the legislature to counteract. I think on occasion, sometimes statements made by the administration that probably deserve to be aired and facts given in a different way. So I see nothing wrong with that. I think it's a little bit dangerous if we have a proliferation of all of these, but that's a judgment that has to be made by the stations that carry them, I guess.
Senator, thanks. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Don't worry, Gary. You're not in jeopardy.
Well, I'm worried. Thanks for joining us, Senator.
Thanks a lot. We'll talk to you again.
Okay. Mr. Swigum, you'll be able to stick around for a second half hour of the program, right?
I sure can, Gary, yes.
Great. Speaker Swigum, I was speaking with Senate Majority Leader Roger Moe a few minutes ago, and a few weeks ago it looked like this tax rebate was a sure thing. Is that still the case as far as you know, or are you giving some thought maybe to moving that money into a permanent tax cut of some sort?
Well, I do believe a tax rebate will probably happen at the end of the day when the legislative session is completed. But, Gary, the important thing seems to me from my perspective and certainly from the perspective of my Republican House majority to be the permanent tax cut. I think it was a caller, maybe it was Stephen, I think, that had called 10, 15 minutes ago that talked about the need for permanent tax cuts. And last week I kind of coined that phrase rebate schmebates, and I don't even know what a schmebate is, I guess, but the bottom line is that rebates are nice, and it's nice to be recognized for the overtaxation which citizens have paid to the state of Minnesota. It's nice to get that check back, but the most important thing we can do is permanently cut tax burdens upon working moms and dads, upon taxpayers, so that we don't get in that position, Gary, of either deciding how to spend the rebate for new programs, or the surplus for new programs, or to redistribute it back to the citizens.
Mm-hmm. Governor Ventura, though, wants to hang on to a good share of it to finance a major overhaul of the property tax system next year. Is that going to fly?
I think you'll see both House and Senate wanting to send a lot of the money back to the citizens necessarily keeping it around for, quote, a property tax reform proposal. Although, as much as we want property tax reform, if the governor was very serious, he could be doing it this year. We could be coming forward with a property tax proposal this year. I do know that if we do as the governor suggests, that we will have close to a $4 billion surplus as we enter into the next biennium. And that just is simply too much money to be sitting in the hands of politicians and not in the hands of the working people of the state.
Back to the phone. Scott's on the line with a question. Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, Speaker Sagan.
Yes. Hi, Scott.
Hello. The Star Tribune ran a series of articles about 6 months ago on repeat offenders in the different counties. They estimated around 2,700 of them. And
repeat offenders, Scott, in what type of crime?
They tend to get neglected by the system because they're they might be an assault or burglary, or I don't know if burglary was one of them, but wondered if the legislature was going to do anything about this. I work in mental health, and I see some of these folks occasionally. They may have a probation officer in Ramsey County, probation officer in Dakota County, maybe a case manager in Ramsey County or another county. None of us communicate together, or we don't have an easy means of communicating with each other. And the Tribune said, that these folks, they don't commit serious enough crimes to go into jail for a long period of time, but they're kind of the seedbed for more serious criminals.
Okay, let's get a comment here.
Okay, Scott, for sure, as we focus resources from the state, we want to focus them towards, those repeat offenders would be one area we'd want to focus substantial resources to. In the House this year, Scott, we are looking at having a crime bill that was being put together right now, probably pass out of the House by, I'm going to say Wednesday or Thursday of next week, that basically involves the three different areas that we are, quote, addressing this year. One is the integrated information system, and I think you maybe referred to that as to the different counties and what the law enforcement or judges or prosecutors know. We want to begin that integrated information system, and we're certainly, with the consent of Katie Poyer's family, going to be calling it Katie's Law. The second part of the crime bill that we're going to be passing out of the House will involve repeat drunk driving offenses, making the fourth time drunk driving or fourth time DWI a felony. Right now you can have 10, 12, 14 DWIs, and people have had that without it becoming a felony, and we'd like to make the fourth time offense a felony or repeat offense. And then we are also going to focus a substantial amount of resources towards sexual offenders, towards the sexual offenders, and the need for probation, additional probation officers in the state to follow our sexual offenders so to make sure that they do not repeat.
Mr. Speaker, as I understand it, just trying to integrate the computers, the criminal justice system computers, would cost something on the order of $100 million. Are you folks prepared to allocate that much money for that project?
We would probably not, Gary, be doing that this year. We don't have the total plan. We don't have the total roadmap as to how much it will cost to have the integrated information system statewide. But what we would like to do is to start. Whether it's $100 million or $40 million or $60 million, there is some difference there's some disagreement as to how much a totally integrated system is going to cost. But I think we can all agree that we should start, and we should start right now. And I think you find pretty good agreement between House and Senate to pass Katie's Law. My understanding is that the governor has not made a commitment to that yet at this time, but I think you're going to see it pass out of the House and Senate and be put before the governor of the state.
Next caller is on the line from Bemidji. Dan, your question?
Yeah, hi, Gary. Hello, Speaker Spingham. The Minnesota Children's Defense Fund published two findings of a study they did of Minnesota child care. The first big finding was that 75% of Minnesota's preschoolers are in out-of-home care. And another finding that they came up with is that half of kids in preschool cannot have just one arrangement, that families are having to use multiple arrangements for a lot of kids in care. There's some real implications for this for the field. One is that it's much more massive than a lot of folks have realized in the past. There'll be a lot of kids who will end up spending more time in childcare than they will in elementary school, as a matter of fact. The second finding is that staffing for childcare is not having enough support to retain people in the field and to develop quality programs where kids can just go to one place for a day and develop relationships with childcare providers. These findings are really dramatic. And I know that this is a limited session. What are you seeing, Speaker Spigum, the legislature doing about really bolstering up a field that's been makeshift for too long and that our kids' futures really depend on?
And I didn't catch the caller's name. I heard he was from Bemidji.
Dan.
And, Dan, was it?
Mm-hmm.
Dan, certainly in regards to the child care problem that exists, and you've laid it out fairly well, the low reimbursements that exist for providing child care, sometimes the shift from need to shift from one facility to another, there are certain needs there. I would tell you that, in perspective, the legislature has responded fairly well to the need over the past years. If my memory is correct, I think in the last biennium we increased funding for child care some 134%, and this biennium I think it was between 36% and 40%. Now I recognize that those are substantial increases in the investment that we're making to provide quality child care, good child care, accessible child care in the state, but it has to be balanced with other needs as well, and we're going to continue to support child care needs. That doesn't mean we're going to be able to do everything that people have asked us to do.
Speaker Swigum, this comes up a lot, and of course it's come up again this session. A lot of people with differing needs and so on, and obviously there's an interest at the Capitol to not to spend every dime you've got, to return some money to taxpayers, kind of hold the line so you don't get yourself into a bind down the road. Do you ever have the temptation to spend all your money in one area and at least theoretically take care of that problem? So one area is taken care of and the other ones, well, you worry about that later?
Rather than
little dribs and drabs here and there, or big dribs and drabs?
I guess I've not had that temptation, Gary, because I've tried to approach it from the standpoint of balance, that there are the need to balance different needs throughout the state, different requests. That's needs of taxpayers and allowing, again, the families to keep some money themselves and not just always have the politicians make decisions, and that's why we're strongly fighting for that permanent tax cut. But Gary, you maybe even referred to that in the question to Senator Moe when you asked about the constitutional amendment to transfer 100% of the MVET.
Mm-hmm.
Having that constitutional amendment to roads and bridges, 100% of the motor vehicle excise tax, we're talking about $500 million per year. And while it would be nice to say we can more than double the amount of money we're spending to we're giving to transportation, in fact, that means almost being put in the position of knowing ahead of time that we'd have to say no to any education needs, no to any social service needs, no to any health care needs, no to any needs of tax reduction or property tax relief. And I think we're trying to come upon a balanced approach, Gary, rather than say put all our eggs in one basket.
Jack, your question, please.
It's great having this excess money to give back, and I'm in favor of some tax cuts, but I've been around long enough. I remember the budget shortfalls we went through in the 70s and 80s and trying to generate more revenue. And my comment is that the Minnesota sales tax at 6.5% is it's nice in boom times, but during recessions that money falls, that income falls. And I think if you're going to have a tax cut, I think it would be prudent to prevent future shortfalls if we reduced the sales tax to a nice round number like 5 or 4%,
okay,
and possibly include clothing with that if it helped to get the percentage down a little more, further even.
Is that on the agenda at all, Mr. Speaker?
Jack, Gary, probably will not be. I smile when I say that. First of all, we're certainly not going to extend it to clothing and make it more broad-based. That is not going to happen, and I can say that with pretty good assurance. In regards to the reduction, though, of the sales tax, that is something that I had argued for last fall as we were looking to see which tax be reduced. And for a number of reasons, we didn't end up at the sales tax, but I had argued that if we could eliminate that half cent sales tax. Remember when we went from 6 to 6.5%, I think in 1992, maybe it was 91, that would be a very broad-based tax reduction, and then it would go a long ways towards restoring that credibility of the legislature to the citizens, taxpayers of the state, and take that word temporary off the half cent. But needless to say, for a number of reasons, including some kind of very soft the direction by the governor, as well as a number of other reasons, that probably will not be in the House tax bill, and I doubt it will not be in, I do not believe it'll be in the Senate bill either.
Long term, won't the legislature have to start moving away from the sales tax with all the sales on the internet and the changing nature of commerce and the rest?
E-sales certainly are going to dramatically change in the future the amount of sales tax collected in the state. Obviously, that's kind of an interstate commerce question. The feds are looking at it. I know that they are had a number of task forces and panels that are dealing with e-business sales right now. And Gary, without question, that those type of sales are growing by very, very large astronomical numbers.
Joe, your question for the speaker?
Yes, a lottery is back in the news big time just now, but I'm wondering whether the speaker could tell us how much money we're getting from the lottery and other gambling sources, and why we don't have a regular report, either from the legislature or from the governor's office or from both, that tells us how much money we're getting from all these big the gambling situations. Okay. And I wonder if you could enlighten us on that.
Well, Joe, I certainly would try. We do get reports, by the way, yearly reports in regards to how many dollars we do raise from the lottery sales and how the a portion of the lottery sales are spent in the state. 40% of the lottery sales, at least the tax from the tax standpoint, have to go to the Environmental Trust Fund. 60% basically go to the general fund in the state of Minnesota. And we also do have a printout of, what type of the Environmental Trust Fund, what type of programs, what type of habitat programs, what type of fishery programs, park programs the Environmental Trust Fund does spend its money on. So I have seen those numbers. If I'm correct, and my memory sometimes is very short, that's the danger, but I think the number that we brought in per year from the lottery to the state was right over $80 million, if I remember correctly. I think it was $80, $85,
$86 million. Mm-hmm. Natural resources, or as you said, the lottery funds a fair number of projects. What about this idea that Senator Lessard has had that pass a constitutional amendment, dedicate a small portion of the state sales tax collections to natural resources projects? Is that a good idea?
Well, I kind of like the idea. I think it's very intriguing to think that there could be some dedication, and probably even the last caller, Joe, would like it a lot. But some dedication of that sales tax dollar to environmental habitat, fishery, sportsperson's concerns. I think the senator, Senator Lessard, has done a pretty good job of including everybody in his bill. He's included, and that's obviously to gain support. He's included fisher persons, he's included hunters, for habitat, he's included parks, trails. It's a pretty all-encompassing bill that he's developing a tremendous amount of support for, just because he has taken the approach of including everybody in this dedication.
But you think a constitutional amendment might be a good way to go, rather than just leave it up to the vagaries of the legislature?
Well, sometimes if left up to the vagaries of the legislature, I think the advocates would say that they don't get the proper attention that they should, that there's other pressing needs that always come forward, and they don't seem to get the priority that they ought to. Senator Lessard makes a very good argument for his bill.
Ann, you're next. Your question, please.
Hi, my question is regarding the issue that was in the news last week about the opening prayer at the beginning of each day's session.
Mm-hmm,
and my understanding is that up until now that's been non-denominational out of respect to the religious diversity of the various people in the House. And I want to know why you personally voted to change that and drop the requirement that it be a non-denominational prayer.
Okay. And in fact, until last year, the word non-denominational was not in the rule. That historically speaking, it has not been there. And what we do in the House, as we appropriately open every session with a prayer, is we do respect the diversity of not only the members, but of the citizens, of the people of the state of Minnesota. And I think that's appropriately so. We do have Jewish rabbis, we have Catholic priests, we have sometimes a prayer of song. Last Thursday, I think we had the Bemidji High School choir down to open with a prayer of song. We try to be very, very diverse in the type of prayers that come forward. Within the last 10 days, we did have the rules on the House floor that took the word non-denominational off in front of the word prayer, which, by the way, had just been added last year. And historically, it has never been there. Historically, those words about diversity or non-denominational were never there. They were added in the year 1999. And then I think there was some reconsideration by members of the House that, what actually is a non-denominational prayer? And don't you respect the diversity by having different pastors, priests, ministers coming forward? And I think that's basically where we ended up.
Back to the phones. Alan's on the line with a question for House Speaker Steve Swigum. Go ahead, Alan.
Hi, I've been listening to the program, and I find it kind of shocking because not once during the program, dealing with the problem of what to do with $1 billion-plus surplus, has education been mentioned. And I'm wondering, isn't this a no-brainer? I've had three children in the Minneapolis school system, and I've seen over and over again cuts in the arts, music, art and drama programs. I've had to contribute from my own collection videos to augment their meager resources. I've bought books, dictionaries for shabby, understocked libraries. And it seems to me that our schools and our children need money. And my question is, what is the thinking of the legislators? Do they believe that education isn't the first priority?
Alan, with all respect, I would say quite to the contrary. I think the legislature feels, in a probably pretty much of a House Senate bipartisan way, that education is the top priority of the state of Minnesota. And I think that was pretty well respected and shown last year by the bill which in K-12 education increased funding for K-12 education by $1 billion, a 14.6% increase, by the way. Alan, I think that certainly was showing of the priority of education, and there were a lot of other programs that were reprioritized towards education. Education received that $1 billion increase. What we're doing this year, of course, is this is the second year of the biennium, and in the second year of the biennium, we're not supposed to go through a whole new round of appropriations. Governor Ventura has strongly stated to us that there would be zero spending increase, that there wouldn't be any spending increases, and at least from the House side, if I can only speak about that, we're looking to come forward with what we are terming deficiencies or problems that exist in programs in education. We will be doing some funding of declining enrollments, of equity aid, some funding of technology grants. I'm trying to think of what else is going to be in our bill. Secondary vocational education, I know Gary will be included in our bill, as that was funded only the first year of the biennium, not the second year, and we're going to come forward with what we term deficiency needs without necessarily going through a whole new round of appropriations, which is the second year of the biennium just simply is not for.
Mr. Speaker, this comes up all the time whenever we do these programs. You properly note that the legislature dramatically increased the amount appropriated for education. The callers always call in and say, our schools need more money, we don't have nearly enough money, we're having to cut back. What's the disconnect here? Why is that? How can these two things be true?
Well, they certainly can be from a number of standpoints. First of all, although this education bill did go up $1 billion, so that's exactly the number, and a 14% increase, that does not mean that every school received a 14% increase. Depending upon how much money they received in debt service equalization, depending upon whether they lost students or gained students in the form of declining enrollment, depending upon what their T&E index was, and if they lost money in the T&E index, as was folded in the general formula, not every school received that 14% increase. So that does that's over 2 years, too, by the way, Gary. That's a biennium. And it it does vary from school to school. And then there are obviously from the standpoint of schools. You know, I will tell you that, sometimes other costs have come forward, maybe as others have said some of the negotiated settlements are a little bit higher than what the dollars we provided, actually substantiated, that the negotiated settlements of this past year might have been a little bit more. Now, I personally feel that we don't pay our teachers enough, but obviously you have to be prudent and balance your budget as well. There may be other concerns with transportation costs coming forward or new programs that schools have started as we've tried to ask them to be more than just educators. So, those two things are not necessarily mutually exclusive of each other. They could well be inclusive, that the legislature has given a substantial amount of new funding and that schools still are hurting or in need of dollars.
Are any changes going to be forthcoming in the profile of learning, the controversial high standards part of the new graduation standard? Last year, when all was said and done, nothing was changed in the program. Legislature couldn't agree on what to do. What's going to happen this year?
Yeah, and that was the unfortunate consequence of last year's action, is that while the House wanted to substantially change the profile, the Senate did not, and of course no compromise resulted, meaning that what we have currently in law continues in law, or that the profile continues in law. We from the House this year have already tried to repeal the profile one time with a bill that passed on the House floor with some type of a permanent moratorium. We will have another bill coming forward, a standalone bill, probably within the next week as the committees finish up this week, that will also address the profile, probably replacing the profile with some type of another standard, North Star standards, or at least going forward and reducing the number of standards, eliminating the performance packages. Those are some things that I think the House would like to see done.
Do you think the emphasis finally will be on tinkering with the profile, or will the House make a real effort to scrap it all together?
Well, the House is going to make a very strong effort to substantively reform the profile of learning. If it's just tinkering, Gary, as basically from my perception, the Senate wanted to do last year, if it's just tinkering, that's not going to suffice. That's not going to work. That's not even a reasonable compromise to this situation. So, if it's just tinkering, we'll end up with doing nothing again.
We're just about out of time here, but I have to ask you, too, about the light rail transit line. Now, there's talk that you folks might try to pass a bill which would require Hennepin County voters to vote on spending money on LRT. Is that going to go anywhere, or will the Senate and the governor block that?
I would suspect it would pass the House, but I don't know if it would go any further than that. If you remember, the governor was out in Denver here about 3 weeks ago and was looking at the light rail system out there. If my recollection is correct, I think that was a referendum. The people actually did have a vote, a chance in citizens in Denver to vote on their light rail system. The light rail system, as we see it right now from the House standpoint, at least from the majority of the House standpoint, seems to be throwing a lot of good money away, a lot of money that could be used in a more cost-effective way. When you have a cost-benefit analysis that approaches by the department's own study of 42 cents on a dollar, and by the experts who come in and testify 15 cents on the dollar, you have to be willing to look at more cost-effective ways to transport the individuals, the people in need there. And those more cost-effective ways certainly exist. And I'm just conservative enough to not want to throw my money away, or whether it's my money directly in the state or federal money, which is coming into the state. I want to be used in the most prudent, common sense way.
Mr. Speaker, we're out of time, but I sure appreciate your joining us. Are you going to have your own radio show?
Like Senator Moe, both of us are probably not of the personal nature where we would command any listening audience at all. You are not in jeopardy, Gary.
Thanks a lot for joining us.
We both tend to be a little dry and a little boring sometimes.
Well, so do we. So thanks a lot.
Take care, Gary.
Minnesota House Speaker Steve Swigum joining us from the state capitol today, giving us an update on where the legislators stand about 6 weeks from adjournment.